This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello and welcome to the Brit Rest Roundtable. We're back after a little bit longer of a break than we usually have because there weren't as many shows. We didn't preview Super Strong Style 16, but here we are to review it, and it was a pretty big weekend for both of us. And we're also going to polish our shiny shovels because we're going to be talking five-star wrestling. And I don't know if I'm looking forward to that or despairing for it, but it should make some interesting audio, I think. I'm Ollie Court. Here with me is Arn Furious, as always.
Hello.
And we were both at Super Strong Style 16 last weekend for probably the biggest weekend of wrestling for both of us since 16 Carat. Another big weekend of wrestling.
2 days beforehand as well, so I got quite a lot of wrestling in.
But you missed K-Star.
Fuck K-Star. if anyone from K-Star is listening, like, it's just not for me. I don't know. I have issues with shindies, I guess. Mm. It's like, it should be fun, but I guarantee you there's like millions of kids there, and I'm gonna hate it. Is it a social club?
Oh, yeah. So everyone loves social club wrestling.
Yeah, nobody does.
Far from sort of social club wrestling, the Electric Ballroom, Super Strong Style 16.
Yay!
What were your overall thoughts of the weekend before we like dive into the nitty gritty of day one?
My feet hurt. That was partially my fault because I made a bit of an error in judgment, and when I left the house and I had to choose between very comfortable trainers that I've had for years that were kind of falling apart or brand new trainers which I hadn't really worn at all, and I went with the brand new ones, and I now have like bruising all over my toes, and yeah, it wasn't help because like day one, as I walked out the ballroom, I stubbed my toe on the steps on the way out.
One of the more dramatic storylines of the weekend, the toe stubbing.
Yeah, I spent most of my weekend in agony and tried to kind of compensate for it by drinking. But it was a good weekend. I enjoyed the pain.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the drinking. thank you, Simmons, for providing the afters of entertainment.
I had a lot of afters. I did many different venues.
I think next year maybe I'll get a hotel so I can experience the entire night afterward rather than just, you know, until 9 p.m. and then I have to wuss out.
Yeah, wuss out. The latest I got back was like 4:30 on the last day. Yeah, it's because we just kept going further and further away from the venue, and the venue was like the other side of where my hotel was anyway, because my hotel was by the station, by like Euston. So it's like we went through Camden, past the ballroom, and then kept going, and ended up at like Joe's.
Joe's.
Yeah, you never been to Joe's?
There's a Joe's in Birmingham, but it's not very good.
It's a different Joe's.
Lands are breaking out around UK territory.
Yeah,
anyway, enough gallivanting around,
that was
getting drunk.
Basically, because I followed a drunk Jimmy Havoc, and that's what resulted in me getting no sleep. But you have to.
Day one.
Day oh, one. Curious.
Day yes. one. And day one, it had some pretty decent matches. It certainly didn't have the best match of the weekend. Probably depending on who you ask, that happened on day two or day three, and we'll get to those in a sec. But I think everything was pretty solid here.
Yeah, that's solid is the word I would use to describe day one. It was very solid. It was very consistent. I was particularly impressed with Zack Sabre and David Starr. I thought that was a really good match. Mm-hmm. David Starr, I'm pleased that he got over as much as he did, because he's very, very good. And despite me kind of continually giving him backhand compliments, I actually managed another one over the weekend. But yeah, he did very well. And I think this is probably the best match he wrestled over the weekend, but he was good in everything that he did. So it's a good showing from him.
We'll go match by match here. And starting with Jeff Cobb versus Nathan Cruz. Bit of a weird matchup, and kind of just an exhibition for Jeff Cobb before he got in like his bigger matches of the weekend.
I think it was like a let's show the world what Jeff Cobb can do before putting him in with like a real opponent.
Yeah.
No offense to Nathan Cruz, but like when they put him in the tournament, I was like, first round, out.
Yeah, I don't think many people projected him longer than that, and he wasn't even there on day two and three. So, yeah, this was Jeff Cobb throwing Nathan Cruz around and, yeah, just showing people who'd never seen him before what crazy shit Jeff Cobb can do.
Yeah, yeah, he's a very entertaining man who has ridiculous power.
Yeah. moving on, Haskins Webster. I think you like this a little bit more than me. I wasn't into this very much.
No, I like the logic of it. It was very much Haskins goes after the leg. Flash tries to do other things, but then ends up getting his leg kicked out from under his leg again.
Kicked out of his leg.
Leg. Yeah, that's how it goes. yeah, probably wasn't as good a match as they could have had, but I thought it was solid. I know Alan Boone said that it was like two matches kind of colliding. He wasn't terribly pleased with it, but yeah, I thought it was, again, solid. It was a solid match.
I think this was one that really got affected by like the entrance atmosphere being weird because of all the new music. This was like the first time I'd heard Webster's new music live, and Haskins especially loses a lot not having his Crobot song, which is like gets everyone fired up, and it just wasn't the same with whatever he was using here.
It's a big loss. It's going to take a while to even get used to the new songs.
So I think the atmosphere said, was a little bit weird.
The British strong style music that they've been using for like a couple of months now, I've gotten used to that, and I quite like it.
I quite like it too. It's because CFO dollar sign made it, right? Or like at least like whistled it originally. So like
it's
better than the standard like generic rock that Mark Haskins had here. But yeah, that obviously there'll be some growing pains with the new music stuff, but I thought this was a match that got affected by that, got a weird atmosphere early, and just kind of its placement on the card meant that people weren't like really, really up for it at that point. Which is a bit of a shame, but there we go. Like the first match that I thought had like genuine like fired up emotion going into it was Travis Banks, Jimmy Havoc, which was next up, and Banks getting a fairly big win over Havoc just to establish him as like a major contender in the tournament, and doing like the Havoc throwing chairs at Banks and he chucks him away spot always gets me. And I thought like everyone was like really divided here, which is always good. Like Banks seems to install that emotion in people where people really want to support him, but there's also equally passionate people supporting the other guy. It was like a good football fan style atmosphere going on there.
Yeah, Travis is a weird guy in terms of crowd support, because like people that are really into the like the work rate side of things seem to pick on him, pick up on him as a star like quite early, but there's another side to wrestling fandom, and it's the ones that are perhaps less into like smaller, more mobile wrestlers. and they just kind of consider them there as being fodder for, like, the real stars, like your Riddles and so forth. And he is kind of divisive because of that, but I don't know, he's a really nice guy and he's very talented, so I don't see what's wrong with him getting a push.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were behind him to win this tournament, and obviously, spoilers, in the end he did win, but this was a good first stepping stone. spoilers everywhere. Why would you listen to a podcast about fully detailing a tournament without knowing what happened in it? I'm getting hypothetically angry. So yeah, I thought this was like the first really good match of the tournament going in.
When, because he did the Travis Banks blocking the chair throws, and then he throws one back, and Havoc just headbutts it out of the air, just like, oosh.
And this was like Havoc's only like real match of the weekend, so he was definitely fired up here too.
He had a hell of a contest with some whiskey on the Monday evening.
Alas, dark match.
Yeah.
No one but a select few will ever get to see it. And then Zack Labor Jr. came out to a huge pop. Obviously, Camden Town, wearing a Jeremy Corbyn shirt, you're probably going to get that. Also, just in general, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's all right.
Let's not make it political.
Let's not make it political. But yeah, I kind of like the gimmick of him just being like a really, really big fan of Labour. It's like for this match in particular, I thought maybe they could have done like a heelish turn later on in the tournament, but I enjoyed it for like the one night only thing of him just wearing all red everything.
I'm looking forward to Zack Sabre Jr. Versus Spike Trevay, who's blatantly a Tory. That would be a good political scrap.
It was just a fun gimmick, I thought, going up against David Starr, who was, very consummate this weekend. Like, I didn't think he stood out particularly, but, like, just endlessly entertaining, and, like, proper showman, and they definitely utilized him in the right way this weekend, and this was sort of, like, his best match, so to speak, whereas in nights 2 and 3, he got to be a bit more comedy.
Yeah, like I say, he had a good weekend for me. Like, everything that he did came off well. And like I say, I thought this was the best match of the first night, but technically, anyway.
Yeah, I'd probably say so too. We had a match coming up later. Maybe wasn't like the same well put together kind of match, but it did have like the hype and the big moves to compensate for it. But this one, like you say, just two guys who got each other kind of immediately. I don't think they've ever wrestled before one-on-one, but like you wouldn't be able to tell just from the way they were working together. And like I think we both pointed out Star's Project Champa style move just looked absolutely perfect. Like, that's sort of the best I've ever seen that move perform, and it just looked vicious, like it mangled Zack's back up.
Yeah. Zack is very underrated when it comes to taking bumps.
Oh,
because
yeah.
He's got like a weird spindly looking body, and occasionally he just kind of throws his limbs out in weird directions, and it's like, oh, yeah, that looked really nasty, just because of the way that he takes bumps.
No, I definitely agree with that. He's got like a good frame for making things look like they hurt. Moving on, one of the more memorable matches.
The best part of that match for me is when David Starr decided to introduce Zack Sabre Jr. to his groin. And we got the Zack Sabre that I adore, which is when he's ultra pissed off, stamping on people's heads and just fucking people up with arm bars and stuff. He is so good.
It's good stuff. Moving on to one of the more memorable matches of the weekend, Jack Sexsmith defeating Zach Gibson, playing really, really well off a match they had a couple of months ago, and just kind of concluding this chapter of the Jack Sexsmith story, which I would say has been the best bit of progress in 2017. Like, it's a storyline they put a lot of effort into, like, producing, but also the match quality has come off. It hasn't just been, like, a bunch of series of moments. It's been
occurrence where, like, he's come from the Projo, obviously, and, like he's gained that connection with the crowd, and it's just grown and grown and grown. It's been organic. It's like, yeah. This hasn't been like this is a Projo guy, so we're going to push him. It's like, here's a Projo guy, do you like him? And he's just so likable. And this was great, because like you say, it played off the last match with Zach Gibson, where he got beaten with the Helter Skelter on the floor and got counted out. Yeah. This time the fans threw him back in.
Yeah, and great moment.
The fans were so eager to throw him back in, they threw him back in at 6.
Yeah. Kind of ruined it, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of took the moment away somewhat. It was a nice moment, but it's like, where's the tension going back in at 6?
I
think he was worried that they weren't going to be able to push him back in, and kind of went to the crowd and said, help me early. And
yeah, yeah.
They're just like, get it back in quick, thump, straight back in.
that's fair enough, but like it worked with the story really well, and it kind of makes Gibson look all right as well. Like, he had a genuine reason to be pissed off. Obviously, he still lost on Sexsmith's own merit, but like, he did the same thing he did earlier. It just didn't come off because Sexsmith's won over the crowd so much, and that's sort of what the story they're trying to tell. So it was an organic moment.
He wanted a DQ for it.
Yeah, I did see that. That's funny. So I hope this isn't like the end of Gibson in Progress. Obviously, he's kind of a little bit tied into World of Sport, but that's kind of gone down the drain. So
I think World of Sport's dead, to be honest. So
yeah. So I think he should be all right. But like, he's fallen a little bit out of their loop a little bit in 2017. And he's picked up the slack elsewhere in Rev Pro and stuff. But like, him not being on Night 2 and 3, he's not really synonymous with Progress anymore.
I'm wondering if it was because of World of Sport, because you've seen like Mastiff and El Ligero and guys like that who've also worked World of Sport drop off. Joe Coffey as well hasn't been on the cards. So I get the feeling it's like they were waiting to see what would happen. Because nothing is happening, I think it's a case of, Zach, do you want to come back? I'll be fine with that.
And it means they got to complete the story with Sexsmith as well. So it all worked out. Mm. Really hype atmosphere in the ballroom for this. All the rainbow flags supplied by Will Brown. Good stuff.
Wabs.
And yeah, just a bloody good time, really. And certainly Sexsmith's finest moment in Progress. Good way to end his story. It'll be interesting to see where they go with him from here. Obviously, he's got picked up the injury. But yeah, they can be very happy with how this came off.
I was under the opinion that Sexsmith would be out for about a month because he has like a partial bicep tear. And yesterday he wrestled Jimmy Havoc. So,
okay.
I don't know if it was just fulfilling an earlier requirement or what, but yeah, I think it's like Jimmy trained him, so he's going to take care of him.
Yeah. Moving on, probably most forgettable match of the first day was Tyler Bate beating Pastor William Eva. I mean, this was easily the worst of Eva's performances, but like, that's because his day two and day three performances were really good, but they were comedy centric. It sort of seems like in every time he's put in like a serious match, either just kind of is a bit lost or doesn't know how to get his reactions, whereas when he's in the lighthearted stuff, like, he's in his element. And maybe they need to think about that and maybe work with him to get there on the more serious stuff.
Yeah, I think where Sexsmith has improved is by being able to do those serious matches, whereas Eva, they tried with him a couple of times and didn't quite work. There were bad matches. I mean, like the ones with Marty Skrull were okay.
The problem was there was just no connection there. Like, the connection we just talked about with Sexsmith, like, it was almost the antithesis with Eva.
I think they can get there, though, with what they're doing with him now, with the magical Jesus powers. I think there's mileage in that.
There is, definitely. But I possibly not anywhere near the main event. This was kind of just an extended
they
squash.
They got to build him back up, so yeah. This is one where, of all the the guys that they put in Strong Style this year, the one person that I didn't know what was going to happen to him was Tyler Bate. And it was literally like, he's either going to get like fluke pinned here, or he's probably going to the final. So when he won that match, I had to like mentally rejig the entire tournament in my head. But like my second like rejig was basically what happened. So I kind of got on page.
Yeah, I think that second half of the bracket was always going to be a little less exciting than the first half, because you kind of knew Tyler Bate would come through unless he did get completely shock upset pinned. Because, well, he's the golden boy, and he has to. Like, Trent Seven, I think Triple H is okay with losing, and, like, in the manner that he did, I don't think he'll have a problem with that. But obviously, like, they are playing a dangerous game with WWE and have been for a year. Obviously, things are okay right now, but, like, when you know that your booking is influenced by the Puppet Master, like, it's a little bit worrying as a fan. But, like, right now it's, oh, we have to put in interference in the main event, whatever. But
well, I think they are pushing these guys because they think they're good. So, I think it's more that than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. But it still feels a little unnerving as a bystander.
Eh, I'll watch, see where it goes.
Yeah. And obviously, like, I've said my piece about the British Strong Style story. It is what it is. It's not really for me, because it is so... I bought into it this weekend because I was kind of in the progress bubble. Like, I was buying into the story they were telling. But, like, as a whole going forward, it's still a bit of a weird one seeing progress, like, retweet about their belt being on TV, but then British Strong Style holding it and then hating them because they're trying to leave the promotion with it. It's all just an incongruous mess, but I bought into it this weekend, at least.
I think when the angle is kind of done, pun intended, when Peter has dropped the belt, I think that's time to do something different. I think you're going to see probably Trent, maybe Tyler as well, babyface. I think Trent will turn back face. I think that'll be the end of that.
It's certainly interesting to see, but, like, interesting in a kind of scary way.
Scary's good, man.
Keeps you on the edge. Scary's better than boring, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll take scary over boring any day of the week.
A very interesting match was for me to Mark Andrews in, I guess, kind of a main event spot, considering the last match went 6 seconds, but this was one of the best matches I've seen from two people who had very little chemistry with each other. Like, they were really working hard to make stuff happen in the ring, but it all came off really, really good. So it was kind of like, you kind of recognized that they weren't, like, flowing, but yeah, when they got there,
technically
really
very
awesome.
Good, so it was easy for them to do that without knowing what the other was like. It's just two good wrestlers wrestling the way it is. With Flamita, and I told Jim Smallman this a couple of days ago, I said that I was thrilled that he didn't fuck anything up, because he got booked based on a recommendation I made a couple of years ago. And when he walked out, I was like, oh, this is amazing. I hope he doesn't fuck anything up. But he didn't. He was good all weekend, so I was happy.
Because I would assume the majority of the crowd didn't know who he was, or very vaguely knew who he was. So it was definitely good that he made a really strong first impression. He didn't come out all flippy. I thought maybe that was like would be the easy way to get the pops and get the reactions. Mm. Instead, like, he went technical and went, like, he was surprisingly, like, aggressive and hard hitting here. I liked that. This didn't feel like a standard high flyer ballerina routine. This felt like properly vicious, you know?
Yeah, I kind of wanted them to do all the flips.
Yeah, same. But I appreciated that, like, he wanted to, like, earn it the right way rather than just being a spot monkey.
Yeah, no, he's solid. The thing that kind of shocked me about Flamita is I thought he was kind of... I wouldn't say tall, but kind of tallish. And he walked past me and he was like, I don't know how tall he is, but it's not very tall.
Mm.
Did you actually get to stand anywhere near him or not?
I don't think so. I presume he's taller than me, but
I don't think he is,
much.
No.
Oh, really? I guess he just he carries his like size as well.
This is the thing with Dragon Gate, everyone's really tiny, so it's hard to tell. But yeah, I did not realize he was that small.
Yeah, it was really cool seeing him. I think obviously guys like Pentagon and Phoenix are here a fair few times now. So them going completely out of left field to get a completely different Mexican wrestler from DTU of all places, and obviously Dragon Gate.
Like Jim was saying, it was like they like doing this progress. They like picking people who have not been here before. So it seems like it's more of a deal that they've selected somebody else, whereas like they could have booked Pentagon, but everybody's booked Pentagon. So like if they'd have got in first and booked Pentagon before anyone else had, then I think they would have gone for him. But they just wanted something different. And
no, this felt really really special. And you know, he got Flam Fly, which is great. Both guys had their own entrance themes in this one, which was really nice after like six matches of everyone coming out to generic rock.
Well, Mark Andrews is a smart guy.
Yeah.
recording his own entrance music, that's what it's about. Having is it copyright? No, it's mine. You can use it.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. I would say this is probably my favourite match of the night. But yeah, close second was ZSJ Star. And
main event.
Yeah, and finally, 6 seconds. This was a hell of an event. And Trent Seven worked the crowd up into an absolute frenzy going into this one, like just chatting all loads of shit in the way only he can. He's probably like the best promo in Britain, I would say. I couldn't really name another one like just with his style. Like he's so adaptable.
I could just listen to him talk for.
Yeah.
Why he doesn't do commentary on Fight Club Pro's releases? I just don't know. Or like he should be on there, surely Excalibur style. But yeah, my favorite Trent Seven quote from this weekend was when somebody yelled at him about his voice or something, and he just turned around and monotone said, "These are the dulcet tones of the West Midlands." Oh, beautiful.
He sounded so sad that people were, like, heckling him. I felt genuinely sorry for Trent Seven this weekend. But yeah, this match was 6 seconds long.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been seven. But, oh man, it was good fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like, the thing with having somebody like Riddle is the temptation is there to put him in a load of really like long, cool matches because it's Matt Riddle. But they kind of went in a different direction and just had like that 6 second match. And the whole like crux of it was we want to get this like knee thing that he does, like the knee strike over as like a finish.
Yeah.
So like as soon as he did that in against Trent Seven, you look at the match with Jeff Cobb, he goes after the exact same thing right at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a finish as well. Anyway.
I think so, yeah. I haven't watched it back yet, but like Riddle just has a really special aura around him, especially in progress. They've done they've done a good job with Sexsmith. They've done a really good job with Riddle as well in presenting him in a different way, like as a true threat from anywhere. And like he's got multiple finishes over. He's just a special talent, and progress are maybe using him better than anyone.
I think it's only a matter of time before like Riddle is like the breakout star. He's basically taken that Chris Hero spot. Top indie guy spot, and he's just gone.
But he's only been wrestling
mine.
For 3 years.
Yep.
That's what makes it truly special.
Yeah, well, he's a special guy. That's mm-hmm. that's what he does. His feet and, are like firmly on the floor, though. I think that's one of the, my favourite things about Matt Riddle is that he knows how good he is, but he's not going to just walk around with a massive head. He's just he's so calm about it.
I thought this was a good way of booking for a 3-day tournament. If even on a 2-day tournament like the last 2 years, I don't think having a 6-second match would have gone over quite as well. I think people would have wanted like a proper main event. But on 3 days, when everyone in the crowd is like up for it, and this is only a third of the way through the wrestling they're going to be seeing, third of the way through the story they've bought into, you can definitely do something random like this, and it's not gonna like hurt anything. In fact, it helps and like makes Riddle matches feel a bit different and feel like they can end at any time. And it definitely helped day two and his match with Cobb there. So I thought this was smart to make day one a little bit different, end a little bit differently to how we're used to. And it's always good to have that variety there.
Yeah, absolutely. The what they did with that match is, like you say, it's like any of these matches can end in an instant. That's what happens. Sometimes you just get a lucky shot. And it kind of played into the MMA thing a bit as well, that you can get lucky shot. So, yeah, it was good stuff.
And top marks to Trent for taking it, taking the 6 second loss.
Trent will take a job in 6 seconds. He's not bothered. He got a load of heat out of it. He's still making little cracks on Twitter about it. So he's
five plus one watching TV. That was day one. One I would say possibly the best overall night, but not the best match, which we're going to be getting to very shortly. Should we go move on to day two? Day two started off with Team Wales versus the London Riots. Andrews and Webster, and it's sort of teasing a Riots breakup potentially. Like they're losing to a non-regular tag team here.
Well, they've been losing for a while. It's like a losing streak gimmick thing that they've got going on. And the interesting thing for me was they had Rob Lynch go down injured, and James Davis kind of just walked off. So the implication there is that they're going to turn JD, but. I was kind of looking at it and thinking that Rob Lynch would be the horse to bet on. If you're going to push one of those guys as like a high card talent, that's probably who I'd go with. Unless they want him as a baby face.
Yeah, I think this will kind of shake out after the British Strong Style thing is over. Or maybe before, because people were saying to us during the weekend that like Progress have very few heels, like proper heels with genuine heat. Obviously, like Cruz and Gibson can get the heat, but like they're not particularly high on the card, and obviously the World of Sport thing and how that's shaken out has sort of pushed, like, taken them out of the shuffle a bit. So I think turning one of the Riots, or even both of them, would give them a little bit of extra depth.
That is the thing, because I'm thinking that they're going to break them up, but they can always just turn both of them heel and just have them.
Yeah.
As a couple of arseholes and have them like high card in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they can have them big singles matches and have the other one interfere, and that would be the whole deal.
You got to think of future matches for CCK. If they're going to be ones who take the title off British Strong Style, you got to think of who are they going to feud with after that. And the Riots are definitely a candidate.
That's if CCK win the belts, of course. So there's options out there.
Yeah. Then we had the four quarterfinal tournament matches. Bate defeats Haskins. And yeah, shenanigans at play in this one. I thought this was getting really, really good up until the shenanigans, and then that kind of brought it down a little bit. But still,
they've got great chemistry, those two. So it's not a surprise that they had a really good match. The ending was kind of there because they wanted to put that out there that now Tyler Bate was the only guy that was left in. British Strong Style were going to throw their weight behind him to try and make sure he won. So that kind of made sense that they had them interfere here, but then not in the semi and then again in the final. And there was like a running theme there, which I think that kind of paid off.
Yeah, I was genuinely getting into Bait as a heel here. Like, I was probably, like, slagging him off and telling him his tattoo was shit. Like, he really got me. And in few ways, in a way few people do. Like, just getting all, like, my handbag out and hitting him over the head with
it. You know what it is? I think it's because he's just so laid back about it. Like, he comes out here and he can't even be bothered to, like banter back with people. He's just like, whatever.
He just waves vaguely and...
Yeah. And gets on
the
with
merest acknowledgement. Yeah. And it's infuriating. So you want to give him what for and be an old granny and smack him with your handbag. That's really good.
My favourite Tyler Bates moment of the entire weekend. Did you go to the podcast? You didn't, did you?
I didn't, know.
Tuesday Night Jaw, Jim Smallman held like a live podcast after this night, night two. And Tyler Bate was one of many wrestlers who was just kind of sat at the side of the building. So while people were talking, it was like you get the occasional reaction from the boys over by the side. And Travis Banks was on as one of the guests, and he was asked who his favorite people were to wrestle. And he kind of named a couple and they got cheers. And then he said Tyler Bate, and nothing. no reaction. And I think one person went like, boo. And he stood up and he tried to stare the entire crowd down from the side. It was amazing. I'm pretty sure they didn't film that. There was no cameras there. It was only like audio, but a fucking great moment.
And considering like it's the polar opposite of his WWE UK character, he's proving himself like at the top tier of both alignments, that he can do both with aplomb. So, you know, we already know Tyler Bates, like a whiz in the ring. Like, he's doing such great character work as well. So, you know, two thumbs up to Mr. Bate.
That was the Jack Sexsmith, who we didn't think he was going to wrestle because of this bicep injury. And from what I understand, they didn't want him to wrestle. They just wanted him to like forfeit it and rejig it at the tournament. As the original plan, just didn't happen at all here because of the injury. But that is the only match I'm told that did not go down as intended. Like everything else played out as it should have done, but this one did not.
Yeah, it's definitely a shame that Sexsmith couldn't really do the proper match. Because it would have been very interesting, like we were saying, like what does a Sexsmith versus Sabre Jr. match even look like? And in the end, they weren't really able to do that. They did a little bit, but like it's kind of, you can't comment on it really, because it was just kind of Sabre Jr. just hitting him a little bit, Sexsmith hitting Sabre Jr. a little bit, put him in the crab and then tap out. If they'd wanted to turn Sabre a mega heel and attack the arm, they could have, but, like, that wasn't the direction they were planning to go. But
he was legitimately injured, so really go after the arm. You could possibly go after the other one and just kind of claim it's the other one and leave the injured one alone, but...
So, yeah, a little bit of a shame, but, like, it didn't affect their tournament plans too much, really. So, hopefully we'll see Sexsmith back, and maybe they'll get a chance to redo it. Then we move on to, I would say, our unanimous match of the weekend. Matt Riddle versus Jeff Cobb. And these guys got the platform to go all out and just crush it together.
Well, there's two things I want to say about this. There's one, Tim Terese, who's over from California, goes to PWG all the time. He said this was one of the best matches he'd seen live. And he also said that like Riddle and Cobb had had matches before and they weren't any good. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And the other thing is, I spoke to Jim Smallman about it, and he said that he'd asked them how many matches have you had before, and they said three. And he was like, oh, I thought it'd be more than that because they're pals and they do a lot of the same shows. And he was like, no, three. And they'd never gone over 10 minutes before. So they were told basically go as long as you like and your aim is to have the best match of this tournament.
Mm-hmm. And I think they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, just ridiculous amounts of energy in the ballroom for this one. Both guys were so up for this and did all the, like, their best shit on each other. Like, I presume they had time to, like, work things out together. I'm sure they had a lot of ideas that they hadn't been able to do in their previous matches because of any shortness on time or limits based on their position in the card or whatever. This was their big chance to go all out. I would presume that them spending a few days together in the WXW Academy also helped when they were just like we've seen the pictures of them with Tim Thatcher and Volta and all of those guys just rolling around together. And we got a little bit of that here with, like, the amateur wrestling stuff to start off, moving into Cobb just chucking Riddle around and Riddle smacking him in the face with the strikes. Like, just peak Cobb and peak Riddle going right at each other. Like, it's exactly what you could have wanted with this match.
Some of Cobb's throws in this match were completely insane. Because I've seen him do some of the throws that he was doing, but to, like, much smaller opponents. To see him, like, pick Matt Riddle up and just kind of dead weight lift him one way, then swing back the other way, and then swing back the first way again, and then just throw him over his head. It's just, that is insane. That's ridiculous power.
Mm. But this, Both of these guys can do things that nobody else can do on the indies. And, like, they got to show it here.
Just you saw the state of me after that match.
I saw the state of a lot of people around me. Like, couldn't believe what we'd just seen. Like, yeah. This was, like, pure athleticism going on here. Like, you can fake it. You can, like, there's plenty of great athletes on the indies. But these, like, are two legitimately great, like, professional athletes, and just getting to showcase that within, like, the storytelling element of pro wrestling. This is what you want. You want great athleticism. You
this
want great energy. Yeah.
That's peak and pro wrestling right there.
I'd say it's definitely in my top 10 of the year so far. You went, like, the full five on it, though, didn't you?
I went the full five and then was like, I need to rewatch it, because I said the same thing about Chris Hero and Shibata. Because that match shook me. This one, though, it just rattled me even worse. So, like, I was having heart palpitations, like, legitimately.
Man, your body went through the rigor this weekend.
Fuck yeah! Oh, a mess, absolute mess. But luckily, they gave out halftime oranges afterwards, so that allowed me to recover.
Yeah, I very much appreciated that. That was very funny. And it's exactly what I needed, because I was like, ugh, why didn't I have, like, a drink of water before I left? Yeah. Orange will do. So thank you very much, Progress, for the oranges.
That was a lovely gesture. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Like, being 10 years old again.
And not dead.
Moving into the second half, Travis Banks versus Felita. Again, kind of similar to the Andrews match in that they didn't have, like, a load of chemistry, but what they were doing was pretty good.
Yeah, it was like a first-time meeting, wasn't it? So they kind of figured out the basics of a match, and they had a pretty decent match.
If this had been on before Cobb and Riddle, it would probably have lasted better in our memories, but, like, that match kind of blew us away, and not even half-time oranges could resuscitate us.
When we talked about, because we were going to record some stuff live, but your dictaphone wasn't working, so that didn't happen. But I was very excited at the end of day one that Travis Banks was wrestling Flamita on day two.
Mm.
Like, I was really excited about that, but because of the Riddle Cobb match, it just... I think you could have pretty much put on any match after that one, and I'd have just stood there and gone, like, well, this is fine, but, yeah, I'm kind of recovering still.
So, yeah, I think that's one for the rewatch, maybe, away from Riddle Cobb. I thought maybe, like, the tag... If it hadn't been they wanted all four quarterfinal matches together, I get why they would want that, but I think maybe the comedy tag match after that would have been better served as post-intermission, just to bring everyone back in with
yeah,
the super team.
Something different. It was
the super best friends of David Starr and Pastor William Eva versus British Strong Style.
Yes. Pete Dunne was the only one that did not have a good time here. Well, I'm sure he did, but like everyone else was just fucking around. It's just a match for fucking around. And then you've got William Eva doing his Jesus magic.
Mm.
And Pete Dunne at one point just strolls into the ring and kills him with a forearm.
It's a
religious assassination.
Also, Trent Seven's shaking when he was getting Jesused.
Mm.
That was tremendous. Yeah, I think Eva's onto something here with Jesus powers. Like, if he can't work as like a serious wrestler, just go completely the other way and have a bloody good time with it.
I enjoyed David Starr's reaction to, because obviously he has like a million nicknames.
And yeah.
They introduced William Eva as being the King of the Jews. And David Starr's reaction to that was priceless. There were a lot of really good reactions this weekend. Like, wrestlers genuinely, I wouldn't say be triggered by something, but something has set them off and you've got the reaction out of them.
They had a lot of fun with like the non-tournament matches this weekend. Like, I thought it was a very well laid out days 2 and 3 with matches in the right spaces.
I mean, on paper, it was like you're doing Seven and Dunne versus Starr and Eva. Okay, and then when it happened, it was like, I can see exactly why they've done this. It's very good.
Yeah. So yeah, good stuff here ahead of the main event, which I would say was the worst match of the weekend. We've both been kind of forestalling this one, but I guess we have to share the opinions to the masses here.
Well, what I said, so I brought this up when I was talking to Jim, and I said I didn't enjoy the match because I was genuinely scared that Laura was going to hurt herself. And he was saying, like, well, she never does. She just kind of lives on the on the edge, as it were. But she doesn't get hurt. It's just she's managed to develop this style where she looks dangerous, but she isn't.
Mm.
And, I would have to watch it again to see what it was about. The great thing about it was the crowd were not mean to it at all, even though it had moments where it was just like, oh, this looks rough. But I'd love to watch it back because obviously the outcome and the fact that the women's title match was the day 2 main event was a very special occasion. And it meant an awful lot to all of them.
I thought Toni Storm winning and like holding the belt up, that was like the moment. And if that's the only thing I remember of this match, then so much the better because like it was a genuinely good moment. The right woman to win and like the right woman to represent progress on like a bigger platform and their women's division. If she shows up in Japan with it, then like extra buzz, extra publicity. And she's the best woman in Britain right now, especially with Nixon Newell having gone. So
Australian.
Yeah.
best British women's wrestler is Australian Toni Storm.
Big weekend for the Oceania territory in Britain.
Yeah, big time.
As for the match itself, I thought, well, a lot of it took place on the floor, which meant that I didn't see many of the bumps, which didn't help. Like how can you get into someone throwing themselves into chairs when you can't see them throwing into chairs? Like, it just doesn't build any anticipation for you.
Sounded awesome.
That sounded awesome.
I think this is another reason why I want to watch it back, because there was a lot of stuff I couldn't even see.
Yeah.
Even though I tried to move around to get into a better position, it wasn't happening. So.
And then the dreaded triple threat stipulation. Like, there was no reason for this to be a triple threat. I don't think there was really a reason for Laura to be here. Like, they could have achieved the same thing with Toni versus Ginny and made it, like, a proper story. And it just felt like none of the three were particularly comfortable in that triple threat environment, and they couldn't build anything between them, couldn't build any animosity between them.
Triple threats are very hard to put together.
Oh, yeah. Which is why I didn't think it was a very good idea. And it was poorly executed.
So, yeah. I'm going to like kind of reserve judgment on slamming it as a match. until I've rewatched it, because even though like live, we basically both looked at each other and went, I didn't like that. But then I think it was more due, for me, it was more due to the fact that I was concerned.
Hmm.
So I would like to see it again.
I think the problem there is everyone made it through like, in one piece. Her style isn't like good to watch. It's scary to watch, but not in like that, oh, cool Joey Janela Daredevil way. It's in a, oh shit, she looks like Bambi on ice way. And that was endearing when they were doing the Ginny storyline and it was sort of playing into the character, but now she's supposed to be like MMA badass and she doesn't do anything of the sort and slips on the top rope and it's like, ugh, yikes. I'm like yanking at my collar as we speak.
Yeah, there were issues, definitely. Like you say, I think it probably would have been better off as Tony and Ginny, but they have had quite a few matches already. Mm. Speaking of which, I actually saw them wrestle in Birmingham 2 days before the tournament.
Yeah.
So
I think that is probably the reason why they went for a triple threat, is because they wanted Tony and Ginny, but realised, one, they'd already booked it, and two, it had happened like 100 times already this year. So they wanted to make it a bit, like we say, a bit different, a bit special. Well, but
that match is going to happen a lot. It just will.
Yeah.
Because Tony Storm is the best talent that is available, and Ginny is the best talent that there is going to be for the future, because she's the best heel. So yeah, you got the best babyface, you got the best heel. It's just, it's yeah, natural that match is going to happen again and again and again. It just will.
I would have preferred it if they just said, yeah, fuck it, we'll do that, even if it's happened before. Like,
yeah. The thing about Progress is they do want to do things differently. So
I've just thought of a really snarky thing to say, but I won't say it.
Is it that they're copying Fight Club Pro's booking?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. But you know what I mean.
Day three.
So, day three.
Day three indeed. We started off with the Wasteman Challenge, and it, I think Jim said at the end of this one, it was like
the
Wasteman.
We started off with the Lion King.
Oh, yeah, of course. Baby Claudio coming in for the Lion King. I think Jim said he would do something like that about a year ago. Finally, it's come to
pass. He's threatened to do it. I think he had to get permission from his wife.
Yeah, that was a fun way to start things off. I think day three started off with like the rowdiest crowd. Maybe by this point, like the anticipation had built up over the course.
That surprised me as well. It surprised me that they were that rowdy for day three, because
yeah,
I saw people out till quite late the two previous nights. So yeah, that was kind of a surprise. But I myself was actually asleep at a reasonable hour on the middle day.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Paced yourself well.
No, I just couldn't walk. that and they went to the elephant's head, and they have like an ID scanner on the door, and I don't carry ID because I'm 40. But I might have to next time I'm down in Camden area, because probably a lot of London pubs want to know who's in the pub at any given time for terrorism reasons, presumably. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone thinks that you're under 18, but there we go. The Wasteman Challenge Scramble, something like Scramble Invitational.
It's the Hangover Scramble.
Hangover Scramble. Yeah. That's the official name of this match. I guess I'm gonna keep going forward with it. Bunch of like, these guys look like the biggest freaks going, all standing next to each other. You got David Starr, Flamita, Mark Andrews, Flash Morgan Webster, Pastor William Eva, and Roy Johnson, all like slagging each other off to start off.
It was like a carnival freak show. There was much funny stuff in there. When Mark Andrews said Triple H never called you back,
that was probably the best part of the Wasteman Challenge.
My word. That and Flamita doing Macarena. I asked Jim about that as well. I said, was that his idea? He said, yes. Jim wanted him to do Gasolina. But yeah, I don't think you knew the words. So, so you got the macarena instead.
I mean, everyone knows what a macarena is. Right. So.
I didn't know what he was doing to start with. I was like, what's it? Oh, yeah, my God.
It looks so bizarre to have Flamita in there, like in a verbal battle for a guy who doesn't speak any English. Be participating was odd. But yeah, this is a good, fun match to get into it. Like, probably the best, like, light-hearted match of the weekend.
Yeah, this is my kind of thing.
And, like, it was good to see for me to get the shine at the end and get, like, that special send-off with everyone, like, giving him the standing ovation. That was good stuff. And, yeah, like, probably the most out-there guy Progress have ever booked. Wait, in terms of, like, imports.
Ridiculous flip during this match as well. It was a top rope flippy-do to the floor.
Top of flippy-doos.
Yeah, when he went up for it, I was like, is he just going to do like a moonsault or something? Oh no, he's going to do a flippy-do.
Jack Sexsmith was also in this match. And technically, I guess Jimmy Havoc was as well, because he came in
sort of
battered everyone with a chair and was like, I'm not doing this. Which is, I like that. That's a bit more of an edge to the Havoc character. We haven't seen that since he came back. He came back and was just kind of like ultra babyface and didn't have the edge that he used to have. Like he said sorry to Will Ospreay and it was all like played for laughs. I like that this is sort of back to being him, but as a babyface.
Yeah, I think you're right. He did need that edge, but he's also really funny though. Like, yeah. Jimmy Havoc has amazing
like, he's got the same comedy. Trent Seven humour about him.
It's like when he did that run-in later on in the show, in the Haskins-Trent Seven submissions match, and the crowd started chanting, "It's your fault," and he just went, "I know."
Yeah.
It's a good time.
It's good to have self-aware wrestlers. They're aware of the mistakes they've made, battering people with chairs when they're not supposed to. Moving on to the semi-final matches, I was not into these too much. I don't know whether that was like being tired or just them not landing with me, but both matches, Banks vs. Sabre Jr. and Bate vs. Riddle, just kind of were there for me. I don't know what you thought of them.
Well, I was kind of, I dropped back into the back of the crowd for this.
Yeah,
because I knew I was going to review this show, so I was like, I don't want to formulate too many opinions by being like almost in the mosh pit part like we were on night two.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of took a step back. There's a lot of banter at the back of the crowd, and it kind of got to the point where we're all trying to pop each other with by trying to say the most ridiculous things and. Best time. So
I mean, that's basically why you go to wrestling.
Yeah, well, if you're not going to pop the boys, then what are you going there for? So yeah, I kind of watched it from a distance. One of my favourite quips, I'm going to give a shout out to Joel, who's at Heel Wrestling. When Travis Banks was wrestling Zack Sabre, obviously Sabre being the strong Labour candidate, he said, "Tories love Banks."
Good stuff.
I love a pun. That was so good, I wrote it down.
It'll get in the review then.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I quite enjoyed both these matches. Obviously, Travis and Sabre have very good chemistry. They've wrestled each other before, and especially in Fight Club Pro a couple of times. I don't think this match is as good as the two Fight Club matches, but I think it was pretty solid. And Tyler and Riddle, I thought was really good. Yeah, well, I don't know what else to say.
Fair play. I guess we'll talk a lot more about the final, so we'll move on for now to Katie Harvey versus Kaylee Ray. And we're going to talk about two promos that they put up at the end of day two, ahead of day three for matches on this show. This was the far superior one, with Katie Harvey sort of giving out about... how the crowd treated her on her first appearance in Progress.
Singing about
the
sleeve
jokes, which were fucking stupid. And I was like, yeah, Katie Harvey has a bloody good point, and she got it across really well, and she was an alright promo.
And then she came out cosplaying as Wonder Woman, and she got shit for it. It's just...
Or Xena, I thought. Xena.
One or the other.
So this is basically her gimmick now, is that she comes out wearing something stupid and people rag on her for it, which is almost unfortunate in a way, but...
We kind of made the whole point of the promo that I want to be taken seriously, and then I come out in cosplay and people take the piss again.
Yeah,
it kind of eroded the point of the promo slightly, and she lost. So it's just
not exactly getting your point over.
Not really.
wearing a tiara and then losing.
Yeah, come out here, and losing.
Basically, what we're saying is next time she turns up, she should be like just in beige and grey and do absolutely nothing to make any deliberately make no impression so that no one can get on her case.
Yeah. Nah. So, she should carry on doing stupid shit because it's over.
Yeah. Kaylee Ray is just really good.
Yes.
So yeah, this is a decent wrestle. I thought it was a bit odd to put it on before the halftime. Like it didn't really have anything
strange.
Special about it to like give people pause for thought ahead of the break. I thought, yeah, but it was a decent wrestle.
Yeah, I think I probably would have put Pete Dunne and Jeff Cobb in that slot, but
definitely.
Obviously,
but
Cobb
was
in that slot the night before, so I don't know if they were thinking they didn't want to put too much on him.
Yeah.
So they hit. Well, you stole yesterday's show, so go and steal this one too, champ.
I think they wanted the three British Strong Style matches in a row, because they've done that a couple of times on these shows now. Like, having all the matches after the break be a member of British Strong Style, who the faction is, you know, who the most important guys are in the room.
Yeah, looking forward to Toni Storm and Kaylee Ray.
Oh yeah, like that's the best match they can put together, probably, from an in-ring perspective.
Yeah, if we're talking about the best women's wrestler who currently resides in the UK, then that would be Kaylee Ray.
Yeah. We talked about Katie Harvey's promo. It was a good promo. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to talk about Mark Haskins.
Yep.
And his the 19-second promo that rocked the world. I had it transcribed somewhere, but I think it was on my computer back home and not my computer here. So unfortunately, I won't be able to do a reading.
It was smutty.
It was very smutty.
It was swearing.
Vaguely
heavy.
Misogynistic.
Well, I asked him about this as well, because I had him on the podcast on Review Reviews, and I said the only thing that people like really objected to over the course of the weekend, because he was saying it was mostly positive, the reaction to the shows. I said, well, apart from Mark Haskins' promo, and he said, well, we recorded it, and Mark's like, isn't it a bit sweary? And Jim just thought it was funny, so...
It was very funny, but it was also really stupid.
The comedy of this comes from the fact that the fans really latched onto it and were chanting, pussy bitch, and doing so in the same the same intonation that Mark Haskins had given those words.
Yeah.
Which, that was interesting.
It doesn't work out of context, I think. But yeah, like, I think that's on the level of your t-shirt's too tight, Billy, in terms of like just completely whacked out promos that you just can't get a handle on.
it was rushed, and I don't know if they just did like one take and just went, is that all right? Yeah, it's probably fine. So I probably would have shot that again. It's like I was saying to you, I'd rather Mark Haskins cut promos like he talks. Because that intensity is fine when he's in the ring. He doesn't need to be that intense on the promos.
No.
Because he is in the ring. Like Matt Riddle is just fucking laid back and calm. And in his promos, he's just talking normally. That's how he cuts promos. I think Mark Haskins...
You don't need to be Hulk Hogan shouting.
Yeah, no, not at all. I don't think he needs to be that, like, angry all the time, says the man whose last name is Furious. I love Mark Haskins though. Like, when you talk to him, he's genuinely like a kind and considerate person. And I think when he's cutting promos, he should be more himself and not trying so hard to be angry. Because I don't think he is angry. He's got a lovely wife, lovely child.
Why he has no reason to be angry.
I suppose his neck's a bit sore.
I think it's probably high time for a Haskins heel turn, and I think this weekend kind of proved it, because he did not get the kind of reactions he would usually get. Part of that was the music, but like, people around me were like, ah, fuck Haskins. Like, people were not particularly into him.
I think it's partially because he's had a run of title shots, that he's the guy they always give title shots to, which is because he's cracked.
Him and Andrews have been oversaturated, definitely, in the recent booking, because they sort of had one or two too many shows to get to Strong Style, and so sort of just rehashed a couple of things.
Which is fair enough. I mean, they're always going to be good matches. I think with Haskins, I think they're looking at doing something with him and Jimmy Havoc, which I think is going to be really good. And they don't necessarily have to do it as heel face. They just need that intensity.
Havoc's new character is sort of, like, the promo he cut on day three was kind of tweenery. Like, if Haskins stops being so shouty and just becomes like a real person, they can have just a real person feud amidst all of, like, the wacky characters. They can just be like two real guys having a bit of a beef with each other. And that would be good. And it would be like a good rehab for Haskins, I guess, because this weekend wasn't his finest moment. Like, we've sort of neglected to talk even about this match at all, because sort of the promo encompassed everything and engulfed it all.
it was all right. It wasn't... I mean, I love Mark Haskins, I love Trent Seven, but if I was compiling a list of must-see matches for both men, this would not be on it.
No, I mean, this was more of a story match to get to that Havoc feud, and I guess after Seven's six-second loss, him picking up the win on day two and three, even though he cheated here, or got lucky here. He
won by submission without Mark Haskins submitting.
Yeah, he was already passed out, which is actually a Jimmy Havoc move. He did that a couple of times during his title reign. Just a bit of a rehab for Trent Seven after taking the big loss. Like, just giving him a couple of decisions, like, just makes him, puts him back on the, like, that level of the other two British Strong Style guys. Obviously, he's not the same focus, because he's not in the main event. He's, like, the gatekeeper for the team, and, like, the promo guy, and the guy who, like, gets all the heat, like, via the promos. But it's good to at least, for him to say, yeah, he can get wins. Like, he's not just a complete moron. But
he is one half of their tag team champions, so you kind of hope that he picks up wins.
Like, he's not a geek, and I think they wanted to prove that with night two and three.
Sorry, as you wanted.
We'll move on to the Progress World Championship match that they gave to Jeff Cobb against Pete Dunne. And once again, Jeff Cobb fucking having a great match, throwing Pete Dunne around. Like, maybe they didn't get to do as much as they would have liked to do, because this was the match before the main event, and obviously they wanted to throw everything at the wall in the main event itself.
Yeah.
I thought this was really good still.
This would have benefited, like we said, from being the pre-intermission match. I thought it was before the final, I was kind of standing there going like, all right, my feet hurt, my back hurts, my head hurts a bit. Can we just get to the final now? So I think this match kind of suffered from that. Whether that's just me personally, but I just wasn't that into it compared to how into Cobb I was for the rest of the weekend.
That's fair.
And how much I am into Pete Dunne generally. It was just one of them things. I thought it was good. I think if I sat down and watched it in a void or something, it'd probably push in 4 stars. Two very good guys having a good wrestle. But
I think you were maybe fatigued in the second half and I was fatigued in the first half. Mm. So collectively, we were being grumpy about this whole show, but we both liked a lot about it.
Yeah, well, I think that I just needed that to be out of the way so I could get into the main event, which did. I really enjoyed the main event.
This is where my complaint that it was a like kind of like a hollow Infinity comes in. Like, that moment at Fight Club Pro Infinity last year was like so pure, and that was like one of the greatest moments I've had watching wrestling live, and like both of us like encroaching on the ring. Like, you could feel that presence, that intangible presence. And I think for people who weren't there or didn't see that match, this match was like Akil. He said that it was great to finally meet Akil this weekend.
Shout out
to Akil. but like he said, oh, this was one of the greatest moments I've had watching wrestling live, and I was like, it was good. I enjoyed it.
It's not even the greatest tournament final I've seen this year.
No, it was like a diluted version of the Infinity win, and for me personally, like, it just didn't have that kind of raw, visceral reaction, but I guess...
I think that's just because we were there for Infinity. Yeah. I think that's what it was.
Like, they were sort of trying to recapture that magic on the bigger stage.
It was still very good. Mm. I liked
that... very well laid out.
Yeah, I liked that they got the interference out of the way early, because it felt inevitable that British Strong Style would be involved. And then it was like, well, you're always going to have CCK running in if they're available, which they were. And that's that was kind of the end of it. But then they carried on wrestling for 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So you got like another 12 minutes of like back and forth and counters. And I think it helped a lot that Tyler Bate won two of his three matches before the final clean. Because it gets to that point, and you're still thinking, well, Tyler's still won two of his matches. He just beat Matt Riddle, you know, clean as a whistle in the middle of the ring. He could still do this. And that's the whole point of tournament booking. It's like the general idea is that one guy is the winner, but you have to make it believable that other people can win too.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, like, before the tournament even started, I think you had Travis as well, didn't you? As the winner.
Yeah, I thought it would be Travis Bate in the final and Travis winning.
Yes. I wasn't sure if he'd make it out the first round, in which case I had Travis going over Riddle. But that was basically the two options that were available. But it makes sense to have a heel versus face final. And I thought the booking was solid. I think everything they did worked. Obviously the crowd reacted huge for everything. There was a massive pop at the end. So yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think purely on our level, like, not to sound incredibly hipster, which I'm about to do.
You're already sounding incredibly hipster when you said on our level.
Oh my fucking God. Think the shit I say on this, like,
do you want me to go and get you a teapot for your cocktail?
Oh, love the Long Island iced tea in the teapot that Kia was downing on night one. He was not a fan of us either, Kia.
No, Kia doesn't like Travis Banks. So
he does not like Travis Banks at all. But like, I was in like the throng, and it was really good, like really great atmosphere, people jumping up and down, like the late winner atmosphere. But like while I got into it, like, it's just not the same raw, visceral emotion in me like the Infinity win had, because that was built up so well. And this is just kind of, I definitely don't want to say it's a ripoff, because it wasn't. Like, they did it their own way. They did it through the South Pacific Power Trip. Like, I understand the Progress have got taken a different road to the Travis
they've ended
Banks
up in
story,
the same
but
place.
It's still, the final moment is kind of the same, and you'll never, like, be able to bottle what happened in the Fiction Warehouse that night up, but like, they did a good job with it on their own terms.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think people that don't follow Fight Club Pro were far more into it.
Oh yeah, I think so.
Even though, like, I think there were people out there who are big fans of Travis Banks, and were wanting him to win, and they were really into the whole atmosphere of the main event. So I think there's possibly the element where it's because he's beaten a WWE guy that it's our guy versus the WWE guy, and that's a story in of itself.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I figured, obviously they did the interference to get the visual pinfall, that crucial visual pinfall. But yeah, like, being able to do, like, a full match after that was very crucial, and it definitely made Banks' win feel a lot bigger than if they had gone straight into the finish with the interference with CCK. And also it sets up a big six-man British Strong Style versus CCK in progress. That'll be pretty mental.
Yeah,
so.
I do like that it all makes logical sense as well because of Travis's association with Chris Brooks.
Definitely.
Elsewhere, it's perfect. And they're in King of Trios, aren't they? So it's like this is an established trios unit. So it's not weird that they're just kind of throwing them together. It makes sense.
Like, CCK have a reason for being here rather than just being the best boys who interfere in main events.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that match. Is that chapter 50? I think it is.
Oh, they're doing the tag title match at 50, but I assume it will eventually come to a boil with a six-man.
I think there is another show, isn't there? Hang on, what month are we in? There are several shows before Alexandra Palace is some way off.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your lasting memory of Super Strong Style?
All the shit getting chatted in Simmons. other than that, I would say.
Are you trying to say that Riddle. Kia is your favourite worker of the weekend? Because it sounds like it.
He did work me good.
Wow.
Yeah, good fun, like, meeting everyone, like, getting to meet Tim, meeting Akil, getting to, like, various other people who I'm forgetting. Like, it definitely felt like a big meet-up atmosphere, which is the best thing about BritRest, is that everyone is, in general, pretty close to each other, and everyone can make all these shows together, talk to each other, share their opinions, no one's an arsehole. Like, it's good to talk to everyone and anyone.
I was there
really.
All weekend, so I mean, over the 3 days, I socialised with quite a lot of different people. Like on the I remember I was hanging around with on the last day. There was that many people. There was the Graps brunch with like Alan Boone and Chris from the Love the Graps podcast. They had that and. When that was finishing up, I was sat with Ian Hamilton and Keith Harris, and we had a conversation about like the business side of the business, and that was like completely different. And then I had to sit down with he's at the King of Boom. He's Portuguese. I can't pronounce his name. I think it's like Juan, but it's not. It's like Jao or something. He says nobody can pronounce it, so I don't feel bad.
King of Boom.
King of Boom. So yeah, I was sat chatting to him. And Joe Atherton and Matthew Gregg from Botchamania. It's like, at what point are you ever going to get the opportunity to get those four people around a table together? It was surreal almost.
Yeah.
But there was that, and there was going out after the shows. I had great fun on the last night, even though my feet hurt, sort of following the boys across town. Had a lovely chat with Damon Moser, not the first time, so I don't think he's completely converted me. But I'll tell you who has: Chuck Mambo.
Chuck Mambo. He had a hell of a weekend from the sidelines with his magnums.
Oh yeah,
Magnum TA.
I was at the bar and he walked past and he went like, "How's it going?" And I was like, "Oh, it's going good." And he went, "All right." And we had just a little conversation about like. He said it'd be terrible if you're at like a 3 day wrestling weekend and in the middle of day two you suddenly realise you hated wrestling.
Got to spend a whole 1.5 days still watching wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be awful.
I mean, there were certainly moments like that over the weekend where I was like, "What the fuck? Got so much wrestling still to watch. Got to come back."
It went by really quickly for me.
It did go by quite quickly, yeah. But there was times when I was just like, "Ah, I'll just sit home." I don't care anymore. I'll tell you, one person who did make a big impression was Big T from the sidelines.
Big T Justice, my God, he's huge.
He's massive. He's, I mean, I hate to go Vince McMahon, but wow. he's gonna be one to watch. Like, even if he's even just minorly okay in the ring, he'll be
I'm
a star.
Pretty sure he's 7 foot tall.
And, like, built like a tank.
Yeah. Yeah, he's quite big. I've never seen him wrestle, so I'm really not sure how good he is. But, yeah, he's a sight.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fair to say.
So, yeah, that, like, just be the experience of the weekend. Like, I don't think it was, like, the same kind of festival atmosphere that WXW 16 Carat had. Like, I was talking to Akil, like, right, on the last intermission of day three, and we were kind of in agreement when we said that it felt a bit like three shows over 3 days rather than, like, a full weekend of shows. Like, that sounds a bit intangible, but it kind of did feel a bit like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of link-up stuff they did. Like, I think if we'd gone to, like, the bingo and the... I mean, I went to the podcast, so that I felt tied into it a bit more with that. But if you'd have gone to, like, all the events, then I think it would have felt more like a whole thing. I did ask if there was a possibility of doing, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say contenders, but that's Rev Pro. Like a trainee show.
Yeah, a trainee show. Pro-Joe
like,
show.
In the afternoon. Well, not in the afternoon, but like before the show or after the show, just to kind of fill a bit of space and get them some exposure. And I was told that they had already like working themselves into the ground over those 3 days, so that was not really happening. But they did encourage London Lucha League, said they were quite happy they did that show. Gave people somewhere else to go and watch wrestling in London during Strong Style, which is exactly what I was asking for. And they said it was a nice touch. They gave a discount to people who'd been at Progress. On the door, I think it was like £2 less or £4 less or something like that if you'd been to Strong Style. So I missed out on Cara Noir versus Bacon Jr. And I'm not taking the piss here. Apparently it was really good.
So any last thoughts about Super Strong Style, or should we get the shovels out?
Oh, let's get the shovels. Let's have a word. Let's have a word with Hinkles.
5-star wrestling.
I fucking told you, right?
back and I basically agreed with you, yeah. But it would be a fuck up.
Back when they first started and they tried to run like the Newcastle, is it the Metro Newcastle? I forgot.
Yeah, it was like three shows.
Very, very big building.
And yeah, yeah. Basically yeah, like 10,000.
Not very many tickets.
Less than 1,000, I think.
And they decided after that, and that didn't really work in particular, and they probably should have reined it in a little bit. But we're going to do a 128-man tournament. It's going to run all summer long. It was like 3 months of stadium shows. And they sold no tickets. And, well, not none, but very few tickets, shall we say. It wasn't viable. Even though they have money, from an amusement arcade chain called Nobles. But, like, even if you've got a stupid amount of money, you still have to have some money coming in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't happening. So they had to go ahead and cancel an entire tour. They pissed off pretty much everybody in Britrest by doing so.
I mean, just reading the tweets, like let alone the fucking behind-the-scenes DMs, which I'm sure must have been popping off. But like Joe Coffey, Charles Samuels, El Ligero, like these guys presumably were seeing this as a chance for a big payday. And
Zach Gibson, Kenny Williams.
Yeah, like that world of sport circle, yeah. Like, these guys have been jerked around this year. Like, you got to feel sorry for them. Like, they've been promised the world and been given absolutely nothing in return.
And you can't help feel
for
it.
Really sucks for those guys.
When you look at how well it's worked out for the guys who signed those mark contracts with WWE, it's like look at how well it's paid off for like Pete and Tyler. Yeah. It's just worlds apart.
But like, all that's shady. All that's scammy. But like, we had to go really low blow here by like, obviously the reason given to the wrestlers for why the tour was being postponed was the Manchester terror attack. That's what was given. And that's just fucking despicable, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. That's just inexcusable, really. I mean, understand where that's coming from, because they're saying we're running stadium shows, nobody wants to go to stadium shows because of the bombings, but that's bullshit. They were not.
It would be fine as a legitimate excuse, but it's not.
It's a bullshit excuse.
It's a lie.
Yeah. And it's the worst possible bullshit excuse you can give, because it's playing on people's deaths, which is, it's just scummy. Back in the day, there used to be a lot of really unscrupulous promoters, like a lot of them. And their sole purpose in life was to screw people over and get as much money as possible and then make off with it before somebody noticed. And that this entire thing just feels like that.
Yeah, it's a huge red flag from start to finish. Like, just from the announcement and when I did a little tiny bit of research into it and discovered this game, this fucking vaporware nonsense where he's like ripped off the WWE characters. And it's like, what is going on here? And just going for arena shows straight away, the 128-man tournament, which is like my dick's bigger than your dick kind of thing for WCPW. Like,
they're making WCPW look awesome, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, WCPW, you know, they're on the Kidani side, you know. But, you know, everyone loves them now. Well, not everyone.
Maybe
but
loves
like
a strong word, but
Like, this whole operation's just been awful from start to finish, I think. Like, from selling less than 1,000 tickets for their first shows, and then continuing on with this, you know, doing the CM Punk promotion, which was obviously just a lie. And the fact that we're even talking about it kind of annoys me, because it means that he's, like, won, because he's, like, still got his name out there.
Yeah.
Which kind of infuriates me.
Ah, fuck him. Well, he's done now. <It's> just, there's no coming back from this. Apparently, the tournament's not been cancelled. It's been rescheduled.
It's been rescheduled to February, March, April.
Yeah.
What percentage chance do you think these shows have of running?
Zero. No, I'd say like 5%. But probably not in the venues that they were intended to run in originally.
No.
And basically, the only reason it's been moved is so people don't ask for refunds.
Rather than having to give out refunds, it's just like, oh, you have to email me to get the refund, and people might not know what's happened until much later, and by then he's already made off. And
well, it doesn't help that the posters are still up.
Yeah, you can. I think you can still buy tickets. Like, at least you could after the news had dropped, but before he'd officially announced it. Like, you could still buy tickets to these shows. So there are people, obviously not in the wrestling Twitter loop, you know, families buying tickets for their kids, birthday presents, whatever, still buying tickets to fucking shows that aren't happening.
The first show was in a week.
Yeah. And the fact that it's happened so close to the time as well, it's just really scummy. There's just no way you can turn that makes it any better. Like, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
It's getting to the point where we've actually found a promoter who makes Stephen Flutter look good. I mean,
like, at least Flutter's
that.
Like semi-legit.
At least Flutter runs shows when he says
runs shows with like an identity and doesn't steal people's money.
Yeah. My God.
Or promise CM Punk on the poster. Like,
yeah. Oh, jeez. Okay, yeah, that's enough. That's enough of that.
That's enough burying. 6 feet under now. Well, we're 6 feet under with a threat of coming back in February 2018.
Yeah, but yeah, 8 months from now.
Next time, obviously, we'll talk about something more positive and more actual Brit-ressy.
Yeah, I have no idea what's coming up. I've bought tickets to loads of stuff. Because as soon as I'd finished recording with Jim earlier in the week, I was like, ah, I'm really into wrestling now. So it's like going to Summer Sizzler, going to Alexandra Palace, going to Fight Club Pro, and they've got like Mustache Mountain versus CCK. And I think it's
Banks versus Dunn as well.
Devlin's in a match with like it's a three way. It just it looks fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Should be a good time, yeah. Like, this is going to be a big summer. Like, however you slice it, up until, like, this run through to Alexandra Palace is going to be a lot of big shows. You've got Summer Sizzler with Rey Mysterio versus Marty Scurll. You've got Daisuke Sakamoto coming over, which is a very exciting prospect, if expensive. And also the J-Cup, the British J-Cup.
Yeah, I'm not around for that.
But like you've got like the obscure guys like Tiger Mask and well Taguchi isn't obscure but like just a guy you never thought you'd see, and I like that sort of appeal that like guys like a Taguchi and a Sakamoto are coming over, and a Fumita just now, guys you just never thought you'd see in person.
Chris
and Wolf. They're coming over.
Chris Wolf,
yeah.
It's just like okay.
Like it's just a really fun time, like not only with the natives and obviously all the contract stuff, it's scary, it's exciting, but it's like interesting most of all, so we can talk about it lots. But like the imports want to get in on it too, and they're like Rey Mysterio, like we haven't seen him for a while on these shores, so yeah, lots of exciting stuff this summer.
Don't care about Rey Mysterio in the slightest.
Neither do I really, but like, like it's the same thing as the Kurt Angle, like it's sort of a once in a lifetime thing to see like a legend. So it doesn't really have any appeal to me.
I went to a SmackDown house show in 2004, I think. And I went to a meet and greet, and the meet and greet was Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio. So I've been there, done that.
Fair play. But, like, have you seen Taguchi live?
Can't say I have, though.
No. Well, there you go.
I think I've seen enough people live. I was saying to... who was it? Might have been Matthew Gregg. But I was saying, like I don't have that list anymore, that bucket list of guys that I really want to see. I've seen enough. I've seen enough weird and wonderful people. I don't have a list anymore. It's just nice to see people.
I mean, I definitely have Sakamoto on my bucket list, so like, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. I keep rubbing it. I'm not even in the country.
Fair play.
Yeah, July is a write-up, I'm not here.
Yeah.
We're still recording, aren't we?
We are recording, yeah. This is like the conversations we have afterwards where we just chat shit for hours. But yeah, we should probably wrap this up.
Well,
do you want to
give out
any plugs?
Plugs? you can go over to reviewreviews.com for like writing and stuff. There you can listen to the podcast that I've been plugging sort of surreptitiously throughout this one, because I recorded it like 2 days ago, so it's really fresh in my mind. It's split into three parts. I had a chat with Jim Smallman, so go and check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious.
You can follow me on Twitter at Another Ollie. My Live at the Cockpit 16 review featuring Josh Bowden versus Donovan Dijak, the hot feud no one ever knew would happen. That is up on Voices of Wrestling, that review. And you can check out the F4W newsletter. My Euro notes are in it every week.
Cool.
All right. It's been a pleasure, Ron. It's been a while since we've done this, but
yeah, it's been about a
good
month.
Stuff. And we'll see you guys again soon. Good night.
Ta-ra.